right now. So James, thanks for sitting down. Just for the record, it is right at, well, at 2:55. This is Kevin Kasanovich on November 26, 2012. So thank you so much for sitting down and being a part of the College of William & Mary Hip Hop Collection. So the first question I want to ask is, if you wouldn't, would you mind just sort of introducing yourself, your name, sort of your history?
I'm James Dingle. I've had a trillion names throughout a career of hip-hop that started in, like, ninth grade. I've been Moriarty. I've had the alias Professor Moriarty for actually a long time. That's Sound Pulse. As far as shows and just being on the scene, I've been in and out of the Richmond scene forever. I mean, like, I was a transplant kid that was born in San Diego. My mom's gonna move here somewhere in the late 80s, early 90s, and this is sort of like the scene amongst the traveling military family, and coming back and forth, you know, seeing like what's now known as Strange Matter be the Nancy Reagan, and before that being Twisters, and catching on to like Wu-Tang shows when Capadonna and Method Man and them used to hang out in the city, and then finding out that this really was an underground city. But that wasn't until later, and that wasn't until much later, but back to the beginning, I just started out as an MC, started out more as a poet, and then it turned into hip-hop. You know, I was out one day on the block, and, you know, someone just kicked some rhymes, and I had the pentameter of a poet, you know, it didn't turn over too well, so I was like, all right, you know, chopped it up a little bit, broke it down, made it a little more aggressive, and stuck it back out there, and got a nice reception, so, you know, just MC. I picked up beat making like 11th grade, and that got me into my music theory and stuff like that. And now I do full engineering, record, lighting, turnkey production, stage rigging, show booking.
Right. You name it, you do it.
Yeah, if you name it, as far as music, I can do it, or have somebody within two shakes of a tail that can do it.
Okay, so. Within all the your various personas, identities, and lives that you managed to pack in hip hop, what's your first memory of hip hop?
My first memory of hip hop is Illmatic 93, because my grandfather, my mom, they're real music oriented. My mom played an instrument. My mom played the clarinet. My dad played the trumpet. My granddad's really heavy into like jazz and Ray Charles. So that was the type of music for me, as far as being a child in that household, was, you know, you can listen to some Mint Condition, maybe you can catch some De La Soul. But, you know, Nas's Illmatic came out and it had that song Life's a Bitch with AZ. And I'm like 10 years old walking through the house, life's a bitch and then you die. That's why you get, I can just, you know, my mother comes out the shadows. What the fuck do you know about life being a psh? And just smacks me back to Africa and shit. And I'm sitting there thinking, and she goes, no, never, never, you can't do that. And I was like, yup. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing.
Okay.
She'd probably be mad I didn't know that, but yeah.
So good. I mean, so what's the you sort of sketched the relationship of your mom and your folks sort of to hip hop.
Yeah, they didn't really. I mean, some of it, because my mom, she's not that dope. She's like, I guess. I'm 29 now, and she's leaving on 50. She's got to be at least 20 years older than me, 21 years older than me. So our generations, as far as they can say, we're kind of close as far as the music evolution goes, because as she was coming into, I guess, adulthood with children, the 80s was happening, so that funk thing and that disco thing was finally dying over and turning into hip-hop. So as far as my uncle, like her brother, he would listen to De La Soul, and my cousin was a DJ. My cousin grew up into a DJ. And his brother grew up into a musician, phenomenal quality. But his funk turned into De La Soul, so De La Soul was the exposure as far as everything else is the hip hop. But she didn't stand that shit. She couldn't stand that shit. It's not music.
Music
should be blah 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 blah. But she kept an open ear. She's a musician herself. So later on, it became cool. But back when we were preteen. Teenagers, hell no. The influence is horrible.
Yeah, so, I mean, was she coming at it as a, I mean, do you think as, like, coming at it as a mom? More so than a musician, or a little bit of both?
I would have to say more as a mom, but maybe a little bit of both. Maybe, because she's still some of that shit she don't listen to.
Okay, right.
I don't blame her. Some of that shit I don't listen to. But nah.
Okay.
She still prefer her music.
Right. So she'd rather hear somebody playing Maceo Parker or Maceo Parker playing Maceo Parker than a sample. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So beside the sort of the lesson that you learned that like this is a way that I can get under my mom's skin. What else was getting you interested in hip hop?
It was the expression. It was my generation. I'm a kid of the '90s. Like everything went down. Like as far as hip hop went concerned, I felt like at 88 through like the golden era. Mm-hmm. That's when everything went down. That's when N.W.A. came out. That's when Nas came out. That's when Daggone. A Tribe Called Quest was so heavy. So heavy. Mos Def came out. Fat Booty came out. Bucktown was out. Like, oh my God, No ID was out. The 90s was like that shit. Simply for the fact of his expression. Mm-hmm. A lot of us, from that point of view, felt like that was the only means of screaming out in the streets amongst everything that was going on. Because even with the Reaganomics subsiding and doing the Bush era and all that other stuff, because as a kid, you're not too terribly aware of that. Mm-hmm. But for the people that were into that style of music or into the culture, that was how we found out about what was going on. We wouldn't really have no say before that, you know. It really. Then, like, well, especially like when Wu-Tang dropped, and everybody was like, "Oh, 5%, this, that, and the third." And if you weren't really exposed to that type of thought, it gave you an outlet to maybe expand in the box that you were in.
Interesting. You mentioned talking about Golden Age and sort of Golden Age history and how it's sort of achieved a sort of mythological moment in terms of hip-hop history. But you included N.W.A. in sort of Golden Age history. And there are certain folks who, when they chunk up that history, not that the fact that N.W.A., of course, comes out at the same time, but, you know, sort of separate because of sort of coastal proclivities that Golden Age is more of...
New York centric thing. I can understand the Golden Age being described as a New York centric thing because that was the label for that era, for that area inside of it. But we can't put ourselves in bottles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, if anything, in the 90s, the Biggie Tupac thing should have showed you that.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you can't, like, in the constant comparison of the two, you have two phenomenal people who, for regardless of whatever reasons, became the speakers of our age for that group. But being separated by a coast is stupid, you know? It's tribalistic, as they say. I can understand the separation, and that's like, oh, that isn't included. But no, these people affected your thought if you didn't like it or not. Snoop came to New York and knocked over the towers. He had a video about it. So what do you want to do? Dre did the Firm album. You can't exclude these things. Everything plays on everything.
There was just interesting. I wanted to. That was my own personal digression in this interview. Okay, so we talked about your family and sort of their interest in hip hop. So what were your friends into?
Most of my friends were into hip hop. I don't think they were always into the stuff that I was into. I mean, technically, I'm below the Mason-Dixon line, so a lot of the stuff in Richmond or in Virginia, period, is kind of southern, for lack of a better label, I guess. Where I was exploring into the Bahamadias and getting caught into the roots because that was prevalent, and going down that gray line and following Aesop Rock, I guess more people were veering off into like the T.I.s and. To the Pastor Troys and the Mike Joneses of the situations. But it was a good balance. Because some of my friends that were really into it, like the MCs and the artists that were really into it, were always following the artistry. Because that's how you stayed on the cutting edge. You can't just be like, yo, sha-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da. Not out on the... Not early, like in the 90s in the streets, you couldn't have done that. Like a lot of the stuff that goes on now, you couldn't have done that in the streets. You could sit home. You could yell that. Maybe even get in a fight.
Right.
You have to be sharp about it because it was about the development of the skill.
Mm-hmm.
Where now it's more about the entertainment from the skill. But it was interesting.
Okay, so, I mean, that's a great way you put it, that in terms of being, I guess, skill-focused really having to develop your skills before you bring it on folks. And now sort of there's a foundation in terms of hip-hop should somehow incorporate X, Y, and Z. It's been set up. but now we're gonna dress it up or put some stuff on it. So in terms of that, I mean, what's your sense of how that came about?
It's always been there. Mm-hmm. I love my conscious community, especially among the hip hop community, but we kind of kick ourselves in the teeth sometimes because separate the two. It's always been there. Mm-hmm. If for every Rakim and Eric B, you had a Sugar Hill Gang, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. or for every Funky Five, Fat Five Freddy, you had like the Treacherous Three, or the mm-hmm. Funky Four Plus One More. Mm-hmm. For every fucking Bahamadia, that's my favorite girl. I was listening to her earlier. That's why mm-hmm. she's in my head. But for every Bahamadia, you also had like the Beastie Boys. It mm-hmm. wasn't the fact that the message is the message. You're going mm-hmm. to party, you're going to learn something. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We're not always in school and we're not always at a party. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is those two topics or those two points of view have been prevalent in hip hop since its inception. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You got Run-DMC. Run-DMC wasn't very apolitical. You went to Chuck D for that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you can't hate on the boys. You can make them conscious of what they're saying to people because people take it to heart.
Right.
And people, you know, what they... People want to hear what they want to hear, and they'll follow how they follow. And in the end, it's an individualistic decision, but you still make the person conscious of it as a musician, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. That's why you hear T.I. come out, oh, I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Or like the Lupe Chief Keef situation, where Chief Keef goes, yes, I'm conscious of this is my music and this is my statement. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line to that, mm-hmm, whether mm-hmm. Lupe likes it or not. And Lupe's mm-hmm. going, well, this is my statement and belief, and this is how I feel about that, because mm-hmm. this is the results of your message. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's how hip hop is. That's how the world is.
Right. So okay. So let's either shrink it down or perhaps expand it. But in terms of all that, how would you define hip hop?
Hip hop at its purest is expression. It's musical expression. Mm-hmm. Hip hop was the means of creating or expressing oneself with what one had. That's why beat machines came prevalent. Mm-hmm. That's why it ended up the way that it did, because motherfuckers didn't have a band, didn't have a 12-piece instrument set sitting in their basement. They mm-hmm. had some turntables and a James Brown break, mm-hmm. and we gonna smash them together, mm-hmm. and we gonna get down, mm-hmm. and I'm gonna take this out, and you know, that's what I did. That's how I felt about it. And now that you got the vibe, you gotta have something to express the vibe of whatever mm-hmm. it is, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's the prevalent form of, that's why hip-hop exists, I think. There was nothing else. There, especially in the 80s hip-hop, like True School era hip-hop, what else was there, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. really?
You know, it's interesting in terms of describing hip-hop in terms of music or the beat, and being able to sort of crash something together by what you have around you. However, what about the visual component of hip-hop? Because folks on both sides will say graffiti is or graffiti isn't. Of course, you know, the sort of foundational elements say that it is, but, you know, in your definition as it being music-based...
As a music-based, as a visual-based and artistic-based, it's kind of like if I was to describe sound and light and color. Mm-hmm. If I was to think of sound and light and shape, it would be graffiti. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's inner city. It's an inner city vibe.
Right.
You squiggle your lines the same way mm-hmm. you can take Action Bronson, the way that he squiggles his rhymes into whatever, or you can take Common and compare that to like Block Robot style or mm-hmm, whatever. It's just mm-hmm. the formats. Mm-hmm. It's just the format of whatever vibe. So your vibe gives you structure, your structure gives you shape, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. there's your expression. Mm-hmm. Some people aren't music geniuses. Some mm-hmm, people mm-hmm. will take what they hear or take what their influences are and draw Mona Lisa or mm-hmm. become PS92, you know, mm-hmm. you see a bunch of stickers everywhere, mm-hmm. come Rocksteady, mm-hmm. it's a couple of like, Richmond's great for graffiti, mm-hmm. That's why it's an interesting question, because yep. Richmond is actually a really good spot for graffiti, mm-hmm. there's a lot of history here, not just that Johnny Z history, there's a lot of people that I would like to talk about that shouldn't be talked about, but I'll just shout out Ghost. And, like, I shout out the Three Kings because, like, they, mm-hmm. they were at the time doing their thing, but they had a falling out because one of the boys told on him. And I'm like, wow, you can't just be telling on people, but that, you know, mm-hmm. but not to digress too far, but, like...
Well, no, I was going to say, actually, definitely stay here and mind it because it, just in terms of starting to put this together,
yeah.
graffiti's been the hardest, community sort of... community of folks to sort
you
of crack.
Never put a face.
Right. And we definitely, you know, and definitely would like to talk about it, but, you know, definitely want to be sensitive to making sure that everyone remains, you know.
Yeah, anonymous, as they say.
But would definitely love to hear the history of it because know it exists, but just trying to find someone to speak on it a little bit.
Oh, man. Graffiti artists, for a good reason, are uptight. I used to do a lot of tagging myself. Mm-hmm. I don't tag anymore. I do other things now, you know. But, like, it's got to be a place, especially in Virginia, because if Virginia give you 2 years, like, you was doing hard time.
Oh, I didn't realize
Virginia
that.
Will burn you, dog. Virginia will burn you on from graffiti, man. And they'll give you a hassle about stickers. And I've been up and down and across this country in, like, Virginia and Arizona got the stupidest laws. And in New York now. Uh-huh. Post 9/11 New York is retarded. It's not the same New York. For all my New Yorkers, I feel bad for y'all. I really feel bad for y'all because it's not the same New York. It's like George Orwell's New York. But as far as graffiti artists, the reason that they are so anonymous is because the risk is so high.
Yeah. I didn't realize it was.
You may see. You may see a really fat mural or something like that. But if I do get caught, hey. I'm sorry, I mean, it's not, I know.
It's all good. Go upstairs, or follow me, or don't follow me. Or...
That's Jason's wife. Nah. That's a kid. They does paperwork, etc. Mm-hmm. The company that is Stage Monkey. It's a family. Mm-hmm. Like my, that's why his newborn picture's there, mm-hmm. next to Katrina, but... Back to dag on the graffiti, man. The graffiti, you as long as you can appreciate it. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, some people feel like, oh, it's vandalism and blah, blah, blah. You got to think about that. Mm-hmm. Not the average person is going to be able to look at a wall and go from dark to light, this is what I want to do, and I'm going to do it inside of 3 hours with spray cans. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. You know? Mm-hmm. And it's the feeling. The feeling is liberating to be standing on something high or be somewhere and just be like, yo, that's my work right there. Or, like, to play the tag game. Because, you know, as far as graffiti setup, there's a point. It's kind of a point system type thing. The easier for you to get caught or the more dangerous the spot is, the more notoriety you have for. So not only are you rebelling against it, but at the same time, you need to express great artwork. It's normally done to hip-hop. And or punk rock. And that's why the punk rock community mess with us.
Oh, yeah. That's right. There's a... There's a sizable Richmond punk community as well, right? I mean,
yeah. Richmond has. I mean, Guar's from here.
That's right.
Guarbecue was like a month ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it's called Guarbecue.
Yeah.
Okay, that's funny.
Guarbecue's from here. There's a couple of people from here that I didn't really know that was from here. I wish I could name them off the top of my head. It's not kind of my.
That's all right. Though. That's for a different archive.
Yeah.
But in terms of So, in terms of the history of, let's say, like, graffiti writing in Virginia, I mean, are there eras? I mean, you know, phases, or...?
There have been eras because of the names that come through here. Like, there was the Ghost thing. Ghost is a huge, Ghost is a phenomenon. Okay. You'll still see his work up here. And then Foam came through. And it's not so much as eras because There's a brother named Hamilton Glass. He's a straight up artist, but he has a lot of influence. He does a lot of mural work, and what we see now is that a lot of things have moved to, hey, I'll pay you to do this mural.
Right.
And I love that because, you know, you went from the era of, oh, I'm rebelling. This is what we're doing, and these are the guys. These were your ghosts of that era, and then you move to, hey, graffiti's, it's not, it's okay. Or then you'll get, like, your notes or whoever, and then, like, oh, graffiti's bad. You got your Foam, and Foam's really, like, blatant, and you see his stuff, and it's really fat out. And it's multiple styles, but you know it's Foam, you know? And to, oh, well, we can pay you $200 to put some graffiti on our wall. And that's kind of where we are right now. And, I mean, there's still a lot of people out there playing the game.
Right.
That's a never-ending thing. But we are at the stage in the artwork where you can definitely put it on a piece of wood and make $500.
And so it seems, though, that, of course, it's taken a while for Richmond to come around. Yeah, for Richmond to come around and say... Oh, yeah, a little bit longer than than anywhere else.
As long as you're doing it legitimately, because, like I said earlier, if you still get caught doing it illegally, they're going to try to hang you for it.
Man, that's unbelievable.
They're going to hang you for it. Like,
yeah, man. Ugh.
It ain't a game.
Okay, so Okay, that's good. That was I'm trying to think how we got.
Okay.
So the visual aspect. So there has been a visual analog with the Richmond scene. In terms of a graffiti scene, but stakes are a lot higher than they
would normally be
than they have been historically anywhere else. Really, that's interesting. And that's interesting that it's Arizona and Virginia, where two states that have a history of being really intolerant to hip hop in a lot of ways. So
yeah.
Okay. Now you mentioned that used to be a graffiti writer, MC for Always,
yeah.
Producer,
yeah.
All sorts of stuff. So is there a way that do you describe yourself in any one way, or are you just sort of like, I'm this polyglot hip hop dude?
James Dangle.
Okay.
You meet me is how you are determines my function into your universe.
Okay. So then, how do you describe your style?
I'm trying to come back to earth. I'm in a band now. We're called Them Red Velvet Joints.
Okay, I was wondering. I saw you posting on that. I hadn't clicked on it yet because I was out of town. I was looking at my phone. I was like, "What is Them Red?"
It gave me a chance. I'm building. We have SoundCloud up now to run some song sketches and stuff like that. But I guess I am received more in the lines of Mos Def, Soul Hav, mm-hmm. Black Thought.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'll take that comparison any day. I love Tariq, and now that I'm out of band, I definitely see the reasons why Tariq is the way Tariq is. So like, that's kind of like I follow the people that influenced me,
mm-hmm.
and those are the people that influenced me. Mos Def,
okay,
Fife, Morris, mm-hmm. All Day, Pondanoose. I love Pondanoose,
mm-hmm.
and but like in that style, so like the Golden Era style project. Mm-hmm. That's what I am. You know, mm-hmm. you are what you eat.
mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. How do your influences mix with Richmond, where you grow up, and like, and then how does that come out of you? Like,
it's a push pull.
Yeah,
because like, some of my songs may not be well received, but as far as freestyling, I'm still one of the people that are mm-hmm. well notarized for mm-hmm. that. And, or like battling, I'll be at a battle. You know, I'm notarized mm-hmm. for that as well. So it's kind of a push pull because as far as the music and how hip hop's in the modern in 2012, let's say the modern era.
Mm-hmm. Corporate era.
Yeah, the corporate era. Your word.
Post-corporate era.
Post-corporate era is indeed correct terms. Post-corporate hip-hop. And there's a lot of people hungry for a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. And I'm just happy to have a niche in it because of the vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Because at some shows, I'm not well-received. At some shows, you may want to hear YF Dim or Young Money Click mm-hmm. or Swag Click.
Mm-hmm.
And because you like swag rap or you like Wiz Khalifa.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand that. I'll gear myself towards that as far as delivery, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you to just use a delivery as a delivery.
Right.
Or spit as, you know, spit rhyme scheme as a rhyme scheme.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, that's the most that I ever try to do because I feel like it's not true to me as an artist. I've spent so much time mm-hmm. defining myself or learning who I am mm-hmm. rather and being in and out of my box, comfortable and not comfortable, to just be like, yo, this is me in my package.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So in terms of, you ran down your influences.
Yeah.
And want to actually talk a little bit about... We might come back a little bit. Want to come back to this. So if I forget, remind me. But in terms of freestyle battle scene. But before we get into that, curious about your creative process. I mean, from the ground up, how are you building a song? How are you building music? Like, what is your process? Is there a way to even describe it?
I always I've been plagued as a child since a child. I've always heard music in my head.
Okay.
So my entire life thus far has been trying to figure out how to get what's in my head out.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess audible,
mm-hmm.
that's the word for it. So like if I'm messing around with like reason, I might start with some drums, or if I'm messing around with the band, I'll, you know,
mm-hmm.
hey, I'm listening to do 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 do, can we do that with the bass? Or I'm learning live instrumentation mm-hmm. now, so I'll pick up, you know, I'll go do 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 do. And from whatever riff, however the wave takes you, is where the wave takes you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's no... I guess, custom bill per bill. Mm-hmm. However the wave grabs you is how it grabs you, whatever that hook is, mm-hmm. that's what hooks you in, and it all falls in play from there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so yeah, you start with the sound, music, and then the rest of it.
The rest of it comes.
Like a snowflake, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or like a cake.
It's like a cake.
That's the best. I guess so. It's like a layer cake.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely like a layer cake. Definitely. Because mm-hmm. your bones and your structure, your meat, your potatoes, your organs, you know, your beat, your drums may be your bones. I'm going to use drums and everything I do off that's going to be based on the vibe of that kick and that snare combination.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I'm going to lay some, this get a sound. Oh, mm-hmm. and you go, oh, word, yeah. And mm-hmm. you build from there infinitely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
so, and then in terms of, you mentioned that you started off writing poetry and then sort of transitioned into figuring out a way to make your poetry work in terms of sort of delivery and rhyme scheme that's unique to hip-hop. Now, when you write, are you still writing like a poet? A traditional poet versus sort of a poet in terms of thinking about it in terms of how would this work as a rap song or in terms of hip hop.
Honestly, I find like that's where everybody starts. Mm-hmm. But in the end, you either get to the point of like I'm just writing music, and being that I've learned all the structures,
mm-hmm.
because that's the difference and that's the learning. Because, like, let's take El Zai from mm-hmm. Slum Village.
Mm-hmm.
He's a poet.
Mm-hmm.
He's nothing but a poet. But you hear El Zai, you go, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But it's not to the point that he's writing as a poet. It's not the point that he's writing as a rapper anymore. He's really just writing the vibe of the moment. He's mm-hmm. really writing to the music.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
like I'm that Method Man and what was it? Method Man and Eminem from, like, 97, 98? I just do what the beat say do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So after a while, you learn, you know, what chant, I guess, what rhythm you're comfortable in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then you learn how to augment rhythms, and you learn that your voice is an instrument. So you're not really writing as a poet anymore,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
or you're not really necessarily writing as an MC, though you may be labeled MC,
right,
because
right.
his words match the music.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
you know, it moves towards songwriting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, yeah, so in any sort of tradition of writing songs.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, right, right.
Your development goes to your expression.
Mm-hmm. So, you mentioned earlier that you've been studying music theory.
Yeah.
Now, how did that come about, and why did you decide? I mean, given the background that you talked about in terms of household. Yeah, of course.
I don't know how you feel about that.
Oh, no, I don't mind. No, man, this stuff travels.
Mm-hmm. You know what you're saying?
Oh, yeah, so in terms of is this a recent development?
Oh, no, my quest into music theory started several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Simply for the fact that, in the end, hip-hop being music is based in theory.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and the
mm-hmm.
more theory, or let's say the more expression and structure you know,
mm-hmm.
the better presentation, the greater your ability, and the greater your ability to communicate with musicians
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you have, because it's an essential part of it. If I'm walking around going la and don't know that it's a D, when mm-hmm. I need to tell a bass is D or I need to tell the guitar D, I can't say D.
Right.
That comes from theory.
Right, right.
It's just translation. It's learning how to efficiently communicate the language of music.
Mm. So have you discovered any interesting insights or sort of revelations about hip-hop from studying music theory? Yeah.
It's all the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the same structure.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the same G structure, but then the human ear, as far as humans are concerned, which I found out goes beyond hip-hop, is only attracted to like 12 note combinations anyway.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Hip-hop utilizes four of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a thing, like it was the G-E something, it's like a G-E-F, or then it reverses itself. I got it written down in the book.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But either way, it's just a three-structure combination of chords that it attracts people, and that's mm-hmm. normally what we rock off of. Mm-hmm. So learning theory gives you the formula. As Guru used to say, as Guru said before he died, mm-hmm. it's not that we change what we do. What we do is we find formulas and we just update them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you mentioned your new band.
Yeah.
So what other sort of current projects are you working on that you're at liberty to talk about?
I'm working on a project with Obliv called Hero for Hire. It's going to end up being a two-part project. I'm going to come out with the first half December 25th, 26th, a little bit after the Equinox. And that's going to be on SoundCloud and Bandcamp. That as far as me, that's other than that, it's the band right now. I'll be recording some other people's projects for JPS. Wink, wink.
Mm-hmm.
Soon. JPS, as it stands, is an artist collective, so mm-hmm. everybody does everything and everybody meets up with everybody, do everything. My focus has been those two projects because they're the heaviest in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
The Hero for Hire project is an Egyptian, it's Sun Ra-ish. Mm-hmm. In the presentation of Man, Myth, and Legend,
mm-hmm.
where it takes place like Luke Cage and Power Man, Hero for Hire, the comic book, but it's set mm-hmm. to Egyptian mythos. And these cats are going through the 2000s and how it is right now,
mm-hmm.
and they're finding out that all this stuff relates back to Egyptian mythology, and it's actually being a current spell being classed on the society as a whole,
mm-hmm.
and how to get in and out of that. But it's also a montage of the day-to-day stuff because it actually does play on that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a layer cake. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that it's my main focus is that a lot of it is in ancient Egyptian as it's spoken.
Okay.
So it's been a lot of translation, and that's why I'm only releasing half the project in the fall.
Okay.
I didn't quite understand how big of a task I was taking.
Yeah.
not quite fully. I do now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I do now, but it's going to be worth it. It's definitely going to be worth it because a lot of research went into that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the band project, the other reason that the band is the band, it's the band.
Mm-hmm.
And once the band is tight, we can do whatever, but
right.
forming a band and you stay on a band, the band's like a good flan.
Right. So, want to actually talk about Just Plain Sounds, and give if you wouldn't mind, sort of sketching the history of how everybody got together.
JPS started with Sleaze, Obliv, and Ants in 03. They had already known each other for a while, and I think they had gone through two or three other names. Me, as far as Just Plain Sounds, I'm a recent addition. I'm maybe 2 or 3 years old.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
As far as JPS is concerned, as a label, they started out with Gordy Michaels, Devon, Alex, and a couple of cats that aren't here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And Ant started, I think the idea was that they didn't want to get caught into the nonsense of a label.
Mm-hmm,
but they wanted
mm-hmm.
the freedom to have a group of people to work with and produce music with on an electronic basis.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how, just how sort of JPS operates, that's how it is. As far as people, we still got Kelly. Kelly's out on the West Coast. A couple of people have traveled. Obliv, mm-hmm. you always see Obliv. You always see Ant. You always see Sleaze. Those are the front faces. You got Drano, Nice, my shorty Veronica. Mm-hmm. She's in JPS.
Mm-hmm.
Drastic's still there. And that's really the formation. Ever since that formation and standpoint, that's been the platform.
Mm-hmm.
So people, you know, you add on. Some people go. Some people are in bands. DJ Phil is in Mother Goose and the Funky Ducks.
Mm-hmm.
Devon Harris is in two bands.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it's, I'm in a band now. So
mm-hmm.
like,
so it's it truly is works as a collective.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And especially, and so when you're all working, when you're working together, or there's a quorum of folks working together, is it all passing stuff back and forth electronically?
This is the house. This is the house.
Okay.
I need you to house. We have a house.
Okay. So, I mean, this is a good jumping off point, too, in terms of just talking about JPS as a way to be able to create and make music and art outside of, or away from sort of major label or industry label stuff. So if you wouldn't mind talking about what exactly is your relationship with something, you know, the music industry, you know what I mean?
As far as the music industry is concerned, I am an underground, unknown, or I guess regional artist, depending on what circles you know me from. But other than that, that's really been about it. There was a while I messed with a label, a small label out of Baltimore, but they ended up burning me for two projects and a couple of $100. And that's my last. I learned about it myself. And if you don't learn about it yourself, then you'll end up with the music industry, quote unquote. Because that's why I like that term you said, post corporate hip hop. Because it's dead. You don't need to go to a label for distribution anymore. You could spit a rhyme in your bag. You could be Bass God. That's my favorite example. Make a beat, spit whatever you want to call it on top of that joint, and blow up next week on YouTube.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm glad you sort of worked back into the sort of this idea of post corporate. Is that it just seems that there really doesn't need to be other than having the label you in a lot of ways, you know. So
that's exactly what it is. You can't beat a label or a corporate entity's marketing. It's already international marketing, and they got the money to destroy universes, and they got the money to put you anywhere as far as CD sales. So my whole thing as an independent artist, as I tell all independent artists, manage your marketing and make sure your distribution, whether it's CD Baby, whether you're on Amazon, whether you're on iTunes, as long as you're out there, you're golden. Because the people with who you attract is who you're going to be attract. It's going to who you're going to attract. Newcomers, or whether it's people that's been listening to you, people that are attracted to the vibrations that they're most like. Other than that, it's not about trying to battle the labels or battle the corporations anymore. They're dying. It's more like, if I'm always fighting the boogeyman will win, because I'm thinking about the boogeyman.
Right.
And if I walk away from the boogeyman and leave him in my closet, he's going to die because nobody's paying any attention.
Right. Okay, so that seems to be a good way to talk about the potential, the sort of setup relationship now. With artists and folks, but curious about what is your view of music industry in terms of its relationship with hip-hop, both in the present day and also we can talk about historically as well if you want.
Present day is industry. I don't really know. I look at it and I'm puzzled, because a lot of the people that were previously artists are in control now. I'm kind of at the decision where, are they in it to keep the thing established the way that it is, or will there be changes? I see certain changes, like a lot of the things that Jay-Z initially talked about doing with Def Jam. It didn't just take effect until here recently.
Right.
So it's more of a matter of kind of being waiting and seeing. And not in so much keeping your own productivity or being proactive in the ways that you're proactive. But the industry as a whole, I think, currently is kind of trying to adapt to the fact that they're not needed.
Right.
They're the guy with the condominiums that find that people want houses.
Right.
So they're trying to figure out how to build a couple of houses. And there are a couple of houses out there. They're, Quali has a label that's doing pretty well. It's the Black Star label. That's really rocking. Suzy Analog and NNXT, they do their thing. Cascade's a lot of international labels out now, but they don't focus on it the way that a label used to focus on it, where I'm signing you to at least the smaller labels. The large labels still do this. That's their bread and butter. They're not going to change that too much. But as far as the small labels, it's like, hey, let's come. I will come work with you, like Stone's Throw. Look at what they did with Dilla. Dilla's on like 1,000 projects, but for each name, that's what he's signed to. He's not signed to anything other than that project. That's why the name is the name that it is. The same thing with MF Doom and being Victor Vaughn and being King Ghidra and Madlib doing all those mashup albums, because the labels are now going, oh, I understand you want to make good music.
Right.
So look, we're going to do this one project. We're going to sign you to whatever name on that one project, and that's what we'll do. Then you can go on and continue to be an artist. And I think that's the best way for them to survive. But that also takes a lot of knowledge from the artist's part. Mm-hmm. Because that's where the historic comes in. Because historically, you walk in, yo, I want to get a deal, son. And blah, blah, blah. And they go, here, put your name on the paper. But you didn't understand that the paper signs you to 5 albums that must accrue and $1 million balance to match the front that they gave you that may have been $75,000 for you to record your entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people didn't understand that. A lot of people didn't see. A lot of people didn't take into account that and therefore ended up getting 2 cents on an album, mm-hmm. becoming label slaves or Craig Mack and Puff Daddy.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, interesting in terms of, especially, you know, if we want to talk about it, I think it's interesting to think about in terms of the music industry historically and its historical theft of music made by, you know, African American folk, Latino folk, I mean, non-white folk.
Yeah.
I mean, so are we perhaps at a moment where the sort of the asymmetry of power, to sort of put it in a clunky scholarly term, but sort of the asymmetry of power that has existed has started to balance a little, where folks can get back a little bit?
I could see, yeah, I see that, yeah. Mm-hmm. You can definitely say that. You can definitely say that. Because the people have always had the power, but they didn't know that they had the power. Now they kind of know that, hey, mm-hmm. we have the power. And I think that hopefully that changes some things. I see a lot of progression coming from that thought.
Mm-hmm.
Because previously it's like, oh, this is what they have, and this is what we'll, so we'll take it. I can only buy so many CDs at Peaches.
Right.
Plan I, you know, whoever can press up 1,000 CDs pretty much wins the game back in the day.
Right.
And we don't have that stipulation anymore.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of, so that leads us back around to how do you get your art out there?
On a digital basis, mostly. I'll keep, like, I got a couple of hard copies in there. Mm-hmm. I'll do hard copies in small bundles or at shows and stuff like that. But as far as my formats have always been, I've always tried to keep it a digital base. It's mm-hmm. just to match the technology. If I have a QR code or if I have a website with a link and you see it up somewhere and you can take a picture of it, you can click the link and you can tell 30 friends about that. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. kind of right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I feel like everybody's kind of limited to their own marketing power. So that's why it's always good to network or
right.
be known in places, because right. after a while your name will do the marketing for you. But until that point, until right. the tipping point,
right.
yeah, you have to work. So you have to work, whether it's CD sales and you shaking hands and giving somebody $2 for a CD sale, or you on my Bandcamp spending $1 on an album,
mm-hmm.
you know, the value, you know, value versus.
Okay. So, going back a little bit to just the folks that you have been connected with and then you work with, of course, JPS and some of the other projects, how did you all meet? How did you get connected?
I got connected through Privileged Kids. Me and DJ Diz. DJ Diz ended up being a part of JPS later, but I was with Orlando Williams, and it was a clothing label coming out of VCU called Privileged Kids, and they used to have 5-cent showcases, and they used to do a bunch of shows up and down the state.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the host for a while. I perform my own songs in between sets and stuff
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was the 5-cent showcase actually at the Camel that I ended up meeting a bunch of JPS, and we ended up like doing the freestyle thing,
mm-hmm.
and just rocking out. Really was a really great show. We rocked out mad hard and everybody had fun, and that's where I met Anthony and Obliv.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, yo, we want, you know, we talking, but it wasn't no immediate, yo, you should be JPS.
Mm-hmm.
That our relationship went on for like a year and a change before it was finally like, yo, I think we're gonna put you in the group.
Okay. Yeah. So they were trying you out.
Yeah,
yeah.
Always it seems to be the best way to do things.
Mm-hmm. So What was the five cent showcase?
5 cent showcase, local showcase. It was built around the old school format of 5 cent showcases.
Okay.
It was mm-hmm. a hip hop format. It had Brother Righteous, who's now at ODU, Tyler Righteous. It had Peter's son, Louis V, me, DJ Diz, and a couple of the cats, Rob was there, Sleeves was there,
mm-hmm.
and it basically, the clothing label is a good clothing, I still got a couple of the things, I think it's defunct now,
mm-hmm.
but for a while it was like, that was the basis, it was hip hop clothing, it was mm-hmm. urban clothing, mm-hmm. we had mm-hmm. urban artists, we went on tour pretty much as far as the region's concerned, with
okay.
urban artists and linking up shows as far as DMV, kind of Washington, D.C. area, and, like, I think we did two or three shows out in Hampton and Virginia Beach area through Intellect and those guys.
Okay. You know, you mentioned ODU, VCU, and knowing the sort of history with the start of the student hip-hop organization.
Yeah.
But there seems to be that Virginia colleges have been a force for hip-hop culture in the state.
Yeah. Ironically enough, I'm actually happy about that.
Mm-hmm.
The VCU's student hip-hop organization, they've always put, as far as culture and stuff down here, just the awareness of hip-hop. And I feel like it's kind of the same for all the student hip-hop organizations in the state. It's something they really go hard for because it's really their culture. Mm-hmm. They didn't get into college and go, we should do something hip-hop for college. They were like, no, we are hip-hop. We're bringing hip-hop to college.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the people we listen to, or these are the people that are around us in college that sound dope, so we're going to hook them up.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the culture in itself falls in from there, because they've brought Raekwon down there several times. Mm-hmm. They did the Atmosphere show at the Canal Club, mm-hmm. so many underground joints, Chocolate Milk shows, mm-hmm. as far as the VCU SHHO is concerned. But I think that's just due to the people.
Yeah, it seems that...
it's really due to that's the lifestyle, and that's what makes it so genuine.
Yeah, because the one of William and Mary, sort of, it seems it's fallen off since the time that like Blair Smith was sort of running it, and Bobby... But I had the pleasure of meeting Aphid at VCU, and so he seems really committed. So
yeah,
I mean that's why it seems like VCU is doing really well, and also folks down at ODU seem to
that's
have a
their
really
lifestyle.
Good,
yeah, it's not a game to them. It's like, and that's what you need.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened to the industry. You had a bunch of people that didn't like hip hop and realized that they can make a lot of money off hip hop, so they fucked with hip hop and he fucked up hip hop. I mean, like, everybody's kind of to blame on that. If you don't know what hands you're playing, you get caught out in the, you know, when somebody scream poker, you get caught out there. But, you know, now there's a bunch of people that genuinely love it. That's why I like the independent. There's the scatteredness, the destruction post-corporate, the destruction of the corporate system. Because now, if you don't love it, you're not in it.
Right.
And it cleans up a lot of sound. It cleans up a lot of bullshit politics.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so sort of all that being said now, how do you view yourself in terms of both hip-hop history and culture?
Hey, you are your history and your culture. I feel more like Kweli and them feel like real-life documentarians. You're not necessarily hip-hop till you live in hip-hop, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You can't quite express what's going on inside the house staring out the window. Other than that, like, I've taken hip hop and, like, especially for me, and trying to seeing what everybody else in the community was doing is making it so you realize that it is music, and that it has a real musical base, especially in Richmond, because Richmond, like, you can be in there with the turntable and some DJs, you'll get a nice turnout, but Richmond and, like, Charlottesville and, like, several other places are band based, and even more tours are band based, and that's a musical aspect people don't really take into acknowledgement as far as hip hop is concerned. They think, we're gonna get some turntables, some b-boys, and we're just gonna shun that.
Mm-hmm.
When even Jay-Z travels around with a band, Lil Wayne travels around with a band, there's a very real musical aspect to what's going on.
Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of, curious, I mentioned that the sort of conflict between communities at times between the Richmond punk community and the Richmond hip hop community. What was that about? Why did the tension exist? In the sense that, in terms of sort of historical roots, there's a lot of commonalities between you know, desires to be punk versus desires, you know, moving into hip hop, you know. So,
I think the tension was just due to media or just like perceived mass thought, because as far as the genres having a lot in common, that's been our basis. That's why skateboarders love hip hop. That's why, like, Printers is not a good example of a punk artist. Oh God. But like, that's either way, that's the scene. As far as the people living in the culture have never really had too big of a beef.
Okay.
That's kind of unfathomable. There are people that have their preferences. Well, I don't listen to that. Yep. That's fine. You know, you listen to whoever you listen to. But the guy over there who's listening to daggone early Zappa and whoever and likes his Run DMC the same way, mm-hmm. is the way that it is. It's just the way that it is, you know? Mm-hmm. And especially being like, let's say poor, underprivileged, et cetera, et cetera, mm-hmm. that nobody's really had a problem. Mm-hmm. If somebody ever said there was a problem, I'm sure if you looked at it, there really wasn't a problem. Yeah. Maybe, you know, communication issues amongst humans, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but as far as the cultures are concerned, not really, you know? Mm-hmm.
Curious about your thoughts or feelings about creating art, hip hop. You know, creating hip hop based art in the capital of the Confederacy.
I mean, like that kind of answers his own self. What you gonna do with all? What you gonna do with all that soul down there, man? Mm-hmm. You got all that soul, all that tension, and regardless of what the politics are, mm-hmm. it's like having a drum. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You're gonna beat on your drum. You can't. It's not something you can stop, and it's not something you can retard for a minute. But it really wouldn't be to any party's benefit. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, not less, as they say in the grand capital of the Confederacy, old money. Mm-hmm. Old money stand to benefit more from the retardation of anything artistic. But even they are following. Even mm-hmm, they're falling. Mm-hmm. You old already. Mm-hmm. But you're gonna do your time gone. Mm-hmm. What is you really gonna do? The time that you had the influence to do something, you may not have necessarily done the right thing, and now it's biting you in your ass because mm-hmm. you could have just been accepting for the situation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you know, for each shore there's a wave. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you sort of we've been skimming along about different clubs, record stores, things like that. But, you know, just sort of mentioned in passing. I wondered if you wouldn't mind sort of running down a list of places places that you perform, that you've seen shows, record stores that you might have frequented when there used to be record stores.
Places that are alive today that mm-hmm. that count as both, in that question.
Yeah.
Steady Sounds on Broad Street. Drew is the man. First Fridays, he holds live shows live art galleries. The Camel, Rand's always been that dude. Rand got arrested for a customer here recently, mm-hmm. Over some parking nonsense, but that's the venue owner that's been holding it down. Strange Matter has gone through that building, which is Strange Matter, mm-hmm. apparently is an energetic center of the city. It has been Twisters, it has been the Ray Gun, it has been Bagelzar. It's been closed and come back as something weird, and now it's Strange Matter, and they still hold shows, mm-hmm. regardless of the venue, and their hip-hop shows are always killer. Black Lick was there almost, what is it, every second Friday? Face Melt Fridays. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So they've always kept hip-hop in that building. There's been a couple other places that are gone now that used to do hip-hop. But it's never been, hip-hop's kind of tough in the city. Mm-hmm. It's never been too many places. Plan 9 out in Carytown.
Isn't that going away?
They've been going away for years.
Okay, so.
I don't know if they're going away for real. And I hope that they don't. I'm kind of glad that they've been going away for years, because at one point in time, that was the only place you could get vinyl. Mm-hmm. There was the Peaches in Southside where they used to do hip-hop, but now that's a Radio Shack. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's about Southside Plaza. There's a couple of the stores that a couple of other, like, Chuck will know more, mm-hmm. a couple of those things more than I would. But as far as that and my scenes and interactions with it, those have pretty much been the places. And then, like, underground house parties heavy, or, mm-hmm. like, there's a secret place in the city called the Yerb. Mm-hmm. Off tape, I will give you an address.
Okay, so that's...
a name.
But, yeah, that's very cool on that. Appreciate it. But So that's interesting. Want to talk is, without revealing anything, is sort of house parties and things like that. Are those? In terms of their impact on the community, is that where more of skills being sort of developed? Things are being sussed out in terms of who's to watch
right now on 97.3 with Black Liquid every Saturday night from like. midnight to 2 a.m. Because he has, he's this long-standing freestyle cypher, and that's pretty much where a lot of the artists go now.
Okay.
As far as house parties, at one point in time, the house parties were there when there was a lot of cats just out on the streets, and you'd bump into cats and be like, oh, well, you're performing. Well, we can also do a cypher or whatever. House parties these days have taken that turn towards more of the entertainment and drinking aspect.
Okay, okay.
You'll still get a couple of artists, like, regardless where you go, you'll still have a percentage of people that'll freestyle or do whatever, you know, to get on just on the expression tip of the music and the vibe at the moment. But as far as skills being developed, I would definitely say Black Liquid has been, is the host of that right now. He's proprietorized that as far as Richmond development, because he himself is one of the greatest, of our city.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, we're in the process of setting up a time to talk.
You'll get them. You'll get them. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, no, we will. It's just it's been me that's been trying to fit everybody in as we go along. Okay, so what is the relationship between Richmond itself and like Virginia Beach, Hampton? I mean, are communities connected, or are they little islands that sort of every now and then you're out there, or
the artists are connected? I don't feel like the cities, as far as group consciousness, are very connected. I mean, like, because we have a lot of people from here that's from the beach. We have a lot of people, you know, from DMV that go to VCU here or just are down here. But there is an awareness of communities. That's the whole DMV thing didn't just hit the northern part of Virginia. It really solidified a lot of different things. Especially like with like local artists like Intellect. I'll bring Intellect up again, and Brother Righteous. They go from Virginia Beach all the way up and down. Same thing with Louis V. So I feel our community, that community bond is being strengthened, though not publicized.
Okay.
Because if you didn't know, or if you aren't really into the thing, you probably go, oh, they're not really too connected.
Right.
Because the mainstream mass of people aren't aware of that, but as far as the artist and what's going on, because we'll have those cats up here at a show in a heartbeat.
Okay. Yeah. So
same, like Antagonist Dragon spits up here often.
Okay. Yeah. So in terms of so the love is there. Everybody knows.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not it's not as isolated as folks
as you
who
see
don't
it.
Know.
Exactly.
Or, okay.
It's not connected as you see it to be.
Okay, and so, quick question for you. Do you know James Allen? I'm bringing this up with the Richmond folks, just because he's an older head. I know that he came up in like the early 90s, Richmond. And so I'm always curious if folks know him or knew him or saw him perform.
I'm not the hottest with names. I'm gonna have to say, nah.
All right, so that's always something to bring up with, because he's another guy that he and I are sort of dancing around, getting together. So I'm always curious if people know him. All right, now we've sort of run down sort of physical places for performing and stuff like that. I'm curious about, is there a sound or style to VA hip-hop that's sort of, that is its own thing? I mean, would you say...
Richmond hip-hop is its own thing. It's a push-pull. Mm-hmm. A lot of cats is transplant cats. A lot of cats is from, like, up north. A lot of the cats that's born in local had the influences of those transplants and the waves that they came in. And to deal with the fact that we are a mid-Atlantic area, so it's not quite south, and you'll get a lot of south, or it's not quite east coast, which is like New York region considered, as far as that terminology is considered. You have a lot of those cats, a lot of science, self-scientific cats has been on like the sciences, studying the 5% knowledge, etc. So I think Richmond, this is the most diverse scene that I could think of. just by personal style. Personal choice, I think, is mad diverse. Because you listen to Black Liquid, who hangs out with BC Music First, and you'll hear BC Music First, who was also from the 757 area, but he's up here now. And you could, I guess, for lack of a better term, you could say that he would be like the Timberland and Magoo, and Black Liquid sounds more like DMX.
Okay. So how would you describe the current state of hip-hop in in the area, in Richmond, but also as a state?
And the current state of hip hop is exactly, I think hip hop is doing exactly what we've chosen hip hop to do. And listening to Yassine, listening to Mos, like especially growing up with Mos, he kind of stuck that idea out there for me in my conception of the idea. Mm-hmm. But we are hip hop. What mm-hmm. we're doing, like mm-hmm. this is hip hop right mm-hmm. now. Mm-hmm. So how we're doing and what we're doing, if we could be doing it, we're chilling at the moment, you know. Mm-hmm. It's something hot may be going on this week, this evening. In fact, there are two shows going on this evening, so mm-hmm. we'll be live again mm-hmm. in a couple of hours. Mm-hmm. Hip hop really does depend on the outlet of the person or the window or point of view mm-hmm. being mm-hmm. spouted out of the house. So as a whole, I think that we're making gains. Life is good. Mm-hmm. Life is good. You can go overseas. Obliv can wake up and fly to Paris right now and rock more people than we got sleep in our entire state. Mm-hmm. Hip hop is good right now. Mm-hmm. I can't even say, like, even with all this internal structure or whatever perceived beefs and qualms people have, we got to take into account right now, as an independent artist, there's a greater chance for you to live the dream of being a successful musician, not in the terms of having gaudy chains
right.
and 1,000 cars, but sustaining your livelihood and however you choose your lifestyle right. to be right now and off your mm-hmm. music. Mm-hmm. You can't complain about that.
Yeah, being a working musician.
You can't complain about right. that.
Okay, so how has hip hop impacted your life? I mean, we're sort of the big picture questions of the interview.
Hip hop impacted my life. Hip hop made my life, man. I get paid. I live, eat, sleep, breathe music. It's not an easy task. Mm. it hasn't been an easy task mm-hmm. because even if I'm not performing, the other working aspects of my life are music. And mm-hmm. if it wasn't for hip hop, I wouldn't have necessarily had the exposure to that area mm-hmm. at all. Like, not at all. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have learned the dichotomy of, the closer you are to the mic, the less money you see, depending on the corporate status mm-hmm. of how you're doing mm-hmm. things. Mm-hmm. Or, hey, you should do production, and you learning production is going to help how you rhyme because you realize that your vocal pattern fits as an instrument. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'd probably be a carpenter right now.
Carpenter. And
bored. Mm-hmm. I went to school for carpentry as well. That's exactly, either that or in business and bored is mm-hmm, hell mm-hmm, mm-hmm. with my life if it wasn't for hip hop. Because hip hop music is music, and now I do music. Mm-hmm.
So, what do you think hip hop's place is in American culture?
I think hip hop's place, though very ill notarized, regardless of whatever social myths or whatever, hip hop's place in music has the same place as rock and roll, has the same place as jazz, has the same place as bluegrass. It's something that came out of the tumultuousness of a culture. Mm-hmm. It came out of the struggle, and it came from the people of that era. Mm-hmm. So for each era, you say there's a music, and to not consider hip-hop a relevant factor in music history mm-hmm. in the development of this culture, society, country, it's kind of like cutting off your foot, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, so now going forward, like future casting, if you will, where's hip hop in your life?
Future casting, hip hop will always be around. Even if I'm an old man, just listening to some random Black Moon album from '94, I can't. Mm-hmm. It's like old people in jazz. You're gonna always listen to jazz. Mm-hmm. We may not always find the right times. We may not always be in the moods for these things.
Right.
My grandfather would say, we're not always in the moods to hear these things, but you will want to hear them. You've been exposed to them. You liked it. You are going to want to hear it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what age you are. And, you know, I feel like as far as a performer, especially with the band, my focus is to keep the band going and going infinitely. But to take it to new genres. We're hip-hop, yeah, but now hip-hop is being crashed in the drum and bass, mm-hmm. or hip-hop is being crashed into, like, Zolk or, like, Kompa out of West Africa mm-hmm. in the global sense and community of hip-hop. Has started to trickle and make itself very apparent because it's always been there. But I think that kind of we have a buffer to the overseas thing. Mm-hmm. And we really do have a buffer. And whatever that's due to, whatever, that's a whole different story. Mm-hmm. But the direction in hip-hop that you can take it is grown. just, I mean, rest in peace, Dilla, but just with Dilla's presence being known by his death and mm-hmm. the instrumentation and the people he's worked with opened a billion doors to cats that didn't even know that the doors were open.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, future casting, we will do what we decide to do. I wish our memory was a bit longer.
Right.
We sometimes kind of give ourselves the fast food, shake a pill,
mm-hmm.
and that doesn't always, that's going to stab us in our foot. I'm afraid of that, mm-hmm. actually. Mm-hmm. That's something that is a current worry to me because we're not building longevity.
Mm-hmm.
And for the cats that have found longevity, we got an eternity to rock, man.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Seriously, when you decide to stop, that's when the rocking stops, and you'll still probably be listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it. You know, you got to. Mm-hmm. You can't not do it.
So, in terms of, you know, sort of weaving my way back and forth through all the questions of the interview, hit everything. However, was there anything that I either sort of neglected to ask that I should have asked, or something that you want to add on?
No, I kind of have a Zen motto about my life.
Mm-hmm.
What we said and what's said is what needs to be here. If somebody mm-hmm. feels that there's something missing, then they'll add on to it mm-hmm. in their own interaction, or you know, corrections or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Man is very fallible. Mm-hmm. Let's say mm-hmm. that. So whatever you need to hear is what you heard. Whatever came out for the moment is what the moment dictates.
All right. Well, that's I think that's a good way to put this interview to bed.
Right.
James, thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking with you. And that's all.
Word.